Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to Iron Age Marketing. I am Nikki P. here, as always. And today, we are talking to Adam Geffen. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself there, Adam?
Hi, so I'm coming to you from Southern Colorado, and I am a science fiction author. I write the Cassidy Chronicles series, universe of books. There are a couple of series within the universe. It is a near future science fiction universe that is a hope punk, and the heroines rescue themselves. They don't wait around for somebody to do the job for them. I'm also an editor and a small time publisher. The next anthology that I have coming out launches in May. So that's exciting.
What kind of anthologies do you release or you put out there?
So I'm partnered up with AC Adams. She is a sapphic fantasy romance author and an unlikely partnership, but she came to me a few years ago after the first book in the Cassidyverse came out. And she was like, I love the characters. And we became friends. And now that she's an author as well, we work together to put out anthologies, as well as I edit her books. So this spring one is a collection of 14 romantic origins stories. So how a relationship gets started. And there are fantasy stories in there that are science fiction, because of course I had to contribute to it. Actually, there are a couple of really good science fiction stories in there that, like I said, fantasy, there's contemporary, there's paranormal. So pretty much, you know, whatever genre you like in the broader category of romance, there's something in there for you. And that's going to be going wide. It's not going to be locked into Amazon.
Interesting. Now, are you a self-publishing author yourself or have through your own imprint, or are you have a publishing deal with somebody, like a big publisher?
So technically, I am a hybrid author, but most of my stuff is out as self-published. Yeah, I have stories in a couple of anthologies that have come out from small presses. So hence the hybrid part. But primarily, I am a self-published author.
I mean, to me, that just sounds like, hey, I've had some big people do some marketing work for me.
To a degree. You know, there are names out there, you know, I'm not going to name drop, but once you're in the author community, it's a very supportive community. It's especially the indie author community, you know, because we're all in it together. We're not competing with each other. So we turn around and we help each other out.
I've yet to talk to anyone through the course of doing this show that wasn't willing to talk to other authors and share what knowledge they have. Like, everyone is definitely very excited to share what they've learned. Most people, like, if no one has given me the idea that they feel like anyone is competition necessarily. It's just someone else with something to say, and I want to help them do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, my experience is different from somebody else's, and so we can both learn from each other.
No, absolutely. So when you went into this, did you decide to self-publish? Obviously, you said you have had some experience with publishers and anthologies. Or was it something that you just, that was your only real option if you wanted to publish your work in large format?
The first book in the Cassidy Chronicles has a little bit of an interesting history, because originally it was going to be four novellas. I had the whole plot pretty well laid out in my head, and I wrote the first novella and released it on Amazon. So this is 10 years ago. All right. So if back when self-publishing was just getting started, at least in any practical sense. So I released the first novella. I wrote the second one, released that one, got started writing the third one. And Then life happened, and 7 years later, I'd written about another 6,000 words in it, and having done pretty much nothing else with writing during that time. So, yeah, 10 out of 10, do not recommend leaving writing for 7 years. Terrible idea. Because when I came back to it, I read the first novella, read the second one, read what I had written in the third one, and then realized I had no idea where I was going with it. I had totally blanked on what the fourth novella was, where the plot was going, any of that. Gone. History. Like it never happened. So I had to come up with a new ending. And I did. But at that point, the third one, which was only supposed to be 25,000 words, ended up closer to 60,000 words. But there wasn't a good place to split it. So I ended up saying, you know, and since the first two-thirds were already out, and they had been wide for, you know, they'd been out there for, at that point, 7 years. There's no way a traditional publisher would touch it. It was out there. So that first one, I ended up putting it all together into one volume, you know, smoothing out all the details and sanding down all the seams and making it a novel, and released that self-published. And that's where I've been going ever since, because I enjoy being the one, you know, I'm responsible for what's in it. I'm responsible for the cover, you know, finding the right designer, you know, doing all of it. And I enjoy holding on to that control. I enjoy, you know, being the one saying, okay, yes, I want this cover.
So your books themselves, what is the idea behind the books or this, you know, Cassidy Chronicles, this universe you've put together? Like, what is, I guess, the unique thing about this that makes your voice and what you're doing its own thing?
So there are 8 books out there right now in the Cassidyverse. And I like to think that I have, no matter what style of science fiction you like, I have something for any reader. You know, the first book, The Cassidy Chronicles, is your origin story. So, you know, throwing it to the MCU, you know, that's your Captain Marvel or your Thor or your Iron Man. This is how these characters got started. Then there's a 4-book series called The Artemis War, which is a space opera. So again, staying with the MCU, this is like the Avengers movies. This is where everything is coming together and the big overarching plots. And I get to dive into some deeper subjects, but they're intended to be, you know, a fun read. And then if you read it closely, you're going, wait a second, did he just say what I think he said? Did he just ask that question? You know, the fourth book in that series, which is called Triumph's Ashes, it has a dedication for those who looked at death and decided the price is not too high. It's about, you know, and the underlying theme is what these characters are willing to give up so that the dream, you know, what they've all been working towards, so that that dream can be achieved. So that's your space opera. That's your Avengers. And then the new series I started, the first book is The Ghosts of Tantor. The second book, Tracking Tantor, I'm about halfway done writing, and I plan to have that out this summer, is more of a Star Trek style. So it's, they're going off and they're exploring, and they have no idea what's out there.
Sounds like more of like a world-building, world-expanding adventure kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's Star Trek before the Federation. So we don't know that there are technologically advanced aliens out there. We don't know what's out there. So they have put together a 4-kilometer-long starship with a crew of 4,000 and given them 3 years to go and find out everything they can. Just go out there. Go. Yeah, sure. Go. You want to go that way? Go that way.
Very, very third, you know, final arc of the Expanse, kind of. The rings are open. Now go explore, everybody.
You know, or Stargate. You know, you don't know where you're going to end up when you walk through. And the other place that you can start is a book called Into the Black, which is a collection of stories set in this universe, and you can read them without knowing anything about the universe because they're all self-contained. You know, the little bits of information you need about the universe you get, you know, in the story, but it's just very briefly painted on, but it's all about the characters. It's all about them. So there's, and I got to play with it. I got to have fun with it. So I got to write a teenage romantic comedy and put it in there.
Okay.
You know, there's a noir detective story that I wrote and put it into this Cassidy Chronicles universe.
Now, I'm curious, is there a reason you set out to just say, I want to go out and create this epic pond for me to play around in? Or is that during, like, say, during the course of that first, you know, novella, first making that first novel, did you just fall in love with the characters you're writing and just want to continue that story and flesh things out? Or, you know, was it the intention to create a universe, or was it just like a natural offshoot of going through your process?
It was more of an offshoot because the first book, it's self-contained. You know, it has a little epilogue which tells you, you know, what happens, you know, in broad strokes, what happens down the line to the various characters. And then I put that aside and started writing what was going to be the next book. And I had a really neat idea, you know, okay, there's an ecological crisis coming. It, you know, it's going to hit Earth in about 20 years. So what is this little group going to do about it? And I got about 5,000 words written of it. And the world building just wasn't there. I couldn't see the world around these characters. At which point, Kendra, who is one of the main characters from the Cassidy Chronicles, kind of popped into my head and said, duh, put it in my universe, you know. And it, so I did, you know, added one little reference to those characters in that first chapter, and all of a sudden it just took off. And when I reached the end of that first book, I knew this was going to be a pretty involved series, because it's, you know, not only is there a crisis coming up, but we're on the, you know, we're on the cusp of a technological revolution. You know, the first faster than light starship is this close to being launched.
It reminds me a lot of like the three body problem, where like everything is preparing for this far off thing, and the world changes so much in the preparation for that thing that like whatever you expected to happen at the beginning of it isn't what's going to happen at the end, because it can't. Everything's different than it was or would have been.
Yeah, and it owes a little bit to The Expanse, although I've seen very little of The Expanse, but what I've heard of it...
The books are better.
Yeah, but what I've heard of it since then, you know, it seems like James Covey, seems like he and I were subconsciously tapped into the same wavelength, because, you know, I created a Solarian Union, which is the Moon, Mars, Titan, and the asteroids. They're all, you know, they're all one nation, and they hold the high ground. You know, they control the solar system, and they don't want, in the Cassidyverse, they don't want a faster than light starship, because that frees the Earth from their control. If we can go to different star systems, we don't need, you know, we don't need the Solarian Union. So they declare war on the main characters.
Definitely. And frankly, like James S.A. Corey, I think is who was, and technically that's two dudes. One of the things I loved about their book series, and I think I've even mentioned it on here before, is that they're the best I've ever seen that attacks macro politics for a book series. What I loved about those books is they've established like a UN type part of like the governmental system. You know, you consider like your capitalist, whatever. And then you have your like Russian style communist nations with the Martians. But then you have like the anarchist groups on the outside in the Belters. And you're seeing how like the interplay of all of these different political factions would work out like real problems. Like you say, like people, there's going to, if you have a big organization like that, that has a vested interest in keeping people under their thumb, that there's a certain way they're going to act. And, you know, I think that the science fiction realm is such a good way to play that out, because you can start working on that problem at a galactic level, you know, and it's a problem that constantly comes up one of my favorite TV shows of all time, no surprise, is Firefly. And what is Firefly about? It's about the central authorities trying to keep everyone kind of under their thumb. And not whether you agree with people or not, not everyone is going to go along with it or want to. And how does that play out in macro politics? So, you know, it's always fun to see the different types of people that have to interact in those worlds. And it gives you a lot of outs as to say, like, I don't necessarily need to be locked into my politics in this. I can kind of look at different peoples and how different characters, and this is what they think. This is how they were born. How are they going to act in it? Kamina Drummer versus James Holden have very different upbringings in The Expanse, and how they interrelate in that is going to be very different.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, science fiction always asks the question, what if? At the heart of every science fiction story, novel, novella is, you know, you can dig all the way down to what if, and there's something in there that is the answer to that question.
No, absolutely. And I guess that's, to me, like, I'm a very hard sci-fi kind of guy. I like my Isaac Asimov, like, where he's looking very specific kind of things. I never really gravitated towards the Star Wars stuff, which to me is just fantasy in space. Don't get me wrong, I like fantasy, and I don't necessarily think it's bad. It just never hits me as hard as, like, how strong that what if is in a good hard science fiction book. you know, Heinlein's another really good one, I think, for that. We got a very specific problem we're looking at here.
Oh, absolutely. Heinlein is, it's funny that you mentioned both Asimov and Heinlein. Asimov, my dad gave me the three-book foundation set when I was probably 8 years old. That's one of the, you know, first science fiction books that I had. And Heinlein has been one of my favorite authors forever.
Well, I like him because he changes up, like you were talking about. Like, you have this universe and this world that you're writing these stories in, but you can play with the format that you're writing them in. And Heinlein was great at that.
He really was. And he made you believe in his worlds. You know, and it didn't take much. Here's a great example of how powerfully he could write to describe a world, to get you into his world. The door dilated. Three words, and you have a setting in your head. You know a whole bunch of things about that world. You know it's futuristic. You know that they're still using doors, so it's still familiar. It's human, you know, because, again, you know, doors are a human thing. And it's just like, you know, it dilated, so, you know, different technologies instead of a door swinging open and shut. All of that, three words. I mean, that, wow.
No, that's awesome. So currently, what are you working on currently? What's the next thing people can expect from you?
So I have two projects going right now. The first one is another collection of stories set in the universe. That should be out by June. I don't have a hard date on that yet because there are still two stories that I'm writing. And the other one is the Tracking Tantor, the second book in the missions of the TFS Pike. That I'm halfway through, and that should be a summer release as well. Beyond that, I'll know when you know.
I'm curious. So how often do you release books? I mean, it sounds like you are pretty prolific in how quickly you put them out. It doesn't sound like it's... How long have you been working as a writer? Obviously, you took 7 years off there. And you don't look like you're a terribly old guy in my world, because I'd have to admit that I'm really old. And I'm not going to do that.
My wife always says I look a lot younger than I am. So I have been writing seriously for 3 years. I mean, that's when the Cassidy Chronicles came out.
So 8 books in 3 years, you're prolific. You're clearly putting them out.
Well, and again, that doesn't, you know, and that doesn't count the anthologies. AC and I put out an anthology last fall, and we have, like I said, the other one coming out in about a month. How long it takes, it really depends on what other projects are going on and how busy I am with conventions and, you know, and things like that. Summertime is a very busy time for me because where I live in Southern Colorado, the closest bookstore is 90 miles away, or the closest new bookstore is 90 miles away. So every weekend I'm down at our local farmer's market, you know, and connecting with the local community and talking to them about books and getting them hooked on science fiction.
Nice. Well, so that actually opens up a really interesting question for me, since you are putting out books so quickly. If you were to get on my website for Iron Age Marketing and offer marketing help to writers, I have a 6-month marketing plan that I put together. Like, if you're going to work on a book, this is what I recommend doing, spending 6 months just on the marketing part of it. Clearly, you're putting out books faster than that just by the numbers. So what do you find is effective for getting people? Do you just kind of have a never-ending marketing cycle that you're going through with each book? Do you just kind of market yourself as a brand and expect people to buy the next thing in the brand? How does that work for you? How do you think about that? How do you approach it?
So some of the reason I got so much out so quickly is because the stories were coming quickly, and I need to have, you know, as an author, it's incredibly rare for an author to have success with one or two books. You need to have that back catalog. And once you have that back catalog, then you can really start marketing, you know, that first book in the series, you know, and that's the magnet. Get people in. Get stories out there in anthologies so that, again, you're getting out there to a different audience. You're getting out there to people who haven't seen you, haven't read your stuff yet, and who might come back to you and read it. And it also helps keep your current fans, you know, aware. Okay, yeah. Hey, look, something new came out. You know, to keep them satisfied while I'm working on the next books. You know, and really, it's got to be a constant marketing thing. You need to be visible. You can't go silent. You know, unless you're one of the massive names in publishing. You know, the brand names. You know, when Stephen King drops a book, everybody knows because it's Stephen King.
I'll be honest, I still wait to find out if it was any good or not.
But everybody knows it's out.
Yeah.
But unless you're at that level, you need to be making those connections. You need to be, you know, putting yourself out there and, you know, not just advertising the books, but advertising yourself and making the connections with the fans and letting them get a glimpse of you and your sense of humor and, you know, what you're interested in, you know, reposting videos that you find entertaining or found enlightening, you know, saying all those kind of things, they keep going.
You want to keep that connection going. Well, it's one of the first things I will recommend, like the bare minimum, anyone, if you're doing any kind of marketing, frankly, you need to be collecting emails. You need to find that way that you own a connection and a way to reach your people. And if you have an email, I'd recommend it at least, you know, at least a monthly thing pitch. You're sending something out there to kind of make sure that your name is staying in their world. And from a fan's base, I love hearing from, you know, people that I'm interested in, you know, anything that gives me insight into what's making them do what they do. It's the first thing I'd recommend is go make sure you're collecting emails and you're talking to your people, and is keeping that going as part of like the ongoing marketing. Do you do like specific things for the individual books, like the push? Do you do any crowdfunding, or do you just kind of release them and sell them as they are? How does that work for you?
So for the individual books, I haven't done any crowdfunding yet. That's still something I need to learn and master and get doing. And I know that. So I will, when I have a new book out, you know, I have a group of fans who will be ARC readers for me and help get the buzz out there, because they'll put, you know, they can put up reviews before the book actually comes out. There is actually a way to do that.
I think it's like number two on my list is find who your real fans are and make sure you get them doing special things for you.
I also, your point about newsletters and, you know, and mailing lists. So, you know, I have my own website. You know, it surprise, surprise, it's CassidyChronicles.com. And, you know, I put up every Monday, I'll put up one or two or sometimes three interviews that I do with other authors. So I'm bringing their fans to my website. You know, I'll interview anybody. You know, I'll interview any genre. So whether they're writing science fiction or fantasy or romance or poetry or nonfiction, I'm happy to have them on there. So that happens every Monday. A couple times a month, I will do what I call Support Sunday, which, you know, I'll highlight one, you know, I'll highlight a book that I want my readers to know about. That goes up on a blog. You know, and then there'll be other things which are supporting other authors. Again, it's a community, so.
Relationship marketing.
Relationship marketing, yes. And my newsletter is actually written by one of my main characters, so it's always done in her voice. She's the one sending it out, and it goes out every 4 weeks. So between all that, the website that I use, the service that I use, when I put up a blog post, it sends out a little email that says, hey, there's a new blog post up. So a few times a week, my readers, my subscribers are reminded, hey, go look at this thing on the website. So that has two benefits to me. First, it gets them back to the website to read something new that I just put up. And the people who have signed up, you know, through a reader magnet, for example, you know, here, have a free book, just give me your email and subscribe. You know, the people who aren't interested unsubscribe, which means even though I have, you know, by comparison, a relatively small mailing list, I have about 500 people on it, I get about a 70 to 80% open rate. So the people who are on my list care about getting the newsletter and they want to be part of it. Those are the people I want to hold on to.
Well, and that's what I say in the marketing plan for books that I do. One of the features is what I call list maintenance. And it's exactly that. It's making sure, since anyone who's never done email marketing, names cost you. And so you want to make sure that there's no dead weight on that list. So it's people who say, there's a perfect amount. You don't want to email two people too much because they'll get off your list. No, get them off that list. If there's a point at which they say, oh, this is just too much, they're not one of your ride or dies. They may or may not buy books in the future. If they're like your books, they'll probably still keep buying them. The people that are on that list, you want to make sure you're giving them the content they want to keep them engaged. And because keeping them engaged is the lifeblood of the next book. We had the guest I had on last week, I was talking to her, and she didn't have an author page, like a .com. And I'm like, you're doing all these interviews. Like her marketing game was real good. She's very aggressive at going out and finding interviews. But where do you send people when it's all done? And then what do you do with them? Like, you've released two fairly successful books and you've never even collected a single email. Just imagine what you could be doing if you didn't have to start from ground zero marketing every new book. You know, you've got a list you can reach. It gives you something to build on. You don't always have to go to other people to reach their audiences. You start cultivating what's your audience. And, you know, getting people to just take those small steps, little things like that. Email list isn't a big thing, but it can be huge once you start walking down that path.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it also gives you an opportunity to interact with, you know, with your readers, because they are going to subscribe. They are going to ask you questions. They are going to email you and say, hey, what about, you know, XYZ? And you can have an exchange with them. You know, and that's why being active on social media is important as well, because it gives you that chance to connect with this author, you know, with this, ooh, can't speak right now, with this reader or that reader or the other reader.
Well, where do we want people who are interested in what you do to go check you out here? That's the big thing. You already said it once, but I want you to say it again.
Absolutely. So the first place to go is CassidyChronicles.com. That's the website. That will tell you where I'm going to be appearing in person. It'll tell you about sales I have going on, because every month I have one of my books available through my website for half price, and that changes every month. It will give you access to all those author interviews that I do and any special posts that I put up. and it'll give you access to various freebies. You can get free books from me.
I like free. Free's a number I get into.
Free is good. Free is very good. I like free too. You know, and of course, pay homage to the 800-pound gorilla. I am present on Amazon. I have an author page on Amazon, and all of my books are available. They're available wide, so you can buy them from Amazon or not. You can buy them from Barnes & Noble or other places. But you can also get all of my books on Audible because I want them to be accessible to everybody. I mean, not everybody likes to read, but they love listening to books. Great, I've got them.
That's always a question I ask, is because you'd be surprised how many authors I find today that like, oh, it's expensive to go and get the audiobook produced. And I'm like, well, you're leaving most of the people that are going to read your book, frankly, on the table, because it is such a big market. Like, I don't know who has time to read books. I tell people I'm certainly not going to sit down and read a physical book because I don't have time. But I'm going to read 104 books this year is my plan. So if you're not making audiobooks, I feel like you're certainly leaving me as a potential client or customer off the table.
Absolutely. You know, and now that they all, it is an investment, but it's also, there is something magical about hearing a story that's being read and being read well. You know, it brings it to life. You still have the imagination. You still have to picture what they're telling you. But, you know, I've gotten a number of fabulous narrators. One was a theater professional, and the other one is a film and television professional. So they know how to emote. They know how to bring the emotion and all the extra things that we don't write into what is essentially their performance. So, you know, it just adds another layer to the experience.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Adam. I always get to the end of this and I always want to keep talking because there's so many questions. Half an hour is not long enough to ask everything I want to ask. It is a nice, concise episode to put out to my listeners, though. So thanks a lot for coming on, man. Glad to have you.
It's been a pleasure. You know, it's been a lot of fun to be here. And thank you so much for the opportunity.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.